Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Environmentalists say Kennecott, Utah Copper is one of Utah's biggest polluters due to the dust particles and exhaust it generates from operating Bingham Canyon Mine. They've sued the company for allegedly violating the Clean Air Act and to block the company's expansion. So, is Kennecott complying with state and federal pollution limits? And what more can the company do to improve air quality in the valley? We had Dr. Brian Mensch on the program a few weeks ago to spell out the concerns of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, one of the plaintiffs in the case against Kennecott. And today on the program, we hear Kennecott's side of the story. Joining me this hour is Kyle Bennett. He is a spokesman for Kennecott, Utah Copper. And Kyle, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Cassidy Christensen. She is an environmental engineer for Kennecott, Utah Copper. And Cassidy, thanks for you coming in as well.
Thank you.
Later on the program, the climber and adventurer Micah Burhart giving us tips on leadership and communication. But first, Kennecott on air quality. If you have questions or comments about the company's role in our pollution problems, feel free to give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Cassidy and Kyle, I want to walk through some of the specific concerns expressed by environmentalists as we go throughout the hour, but before we get there, explain your company's expansion plans. What is the Cornerstone Project? Kyle Bennett?
Yeah, so the Cornerstone Project is our plan to extend the life of the mine to 2028 and beyond. In order to do that, we have to receive a number of permits from regulators to allow us to move more material at the mine, which we've done. We've also proposed some things such as repowering our power plant, which would double the amount of power that we're producing at the plant, reduce emissions by half. So overall, the Cornerstone Project is a mine life extension project that would allow us to really continue operating into the long term. It continues to allow us to be a strong economic driver by providing jobs, income, taxes, and community giving as well.
Extending the life into 2028, what do we produce from this mine? What does Kennecott extract from the ochres?
Well, our primary product is copper. Our byproducts are silver, gold, molybdenum, and in the not too distant future, we'll be able to recover rhenium as well. I think when I think about the operation, one thing that's really critical for people to understand is that our way of life, as we know it today, modern life, is primarily fueled in a large part by copper. It's in our cell phones, our cars, our computers, the plumbing in our homes. It's an essential part of our life. And so, we're really happy to have the opportunity to be here and talk a little bit about what we do as a company and talk about copper, and because we think it's very important.
Mm-hmm. Mining requires moving a lot of earth. And just as some background information for listeners, in 1994, the EPA allowed Kennecott to move 150 million tons of ore and dirt a year. In 1999, you upped that to 197 million tons with EPA approval. And last year, you applied to move 260 million tons. And I guess the question is why? Why do you need this expansion? I understand it'll keep the mine alive and productive until 2028. But overall, why?
Well, one of the primary reasons is Kennecott has always been the ore body. It's the concentration of copper, and it's quite low. So as that ore body decreases even more, we need to be able to move more material in order to get the copper that we need. And so fundamentally, it's about us being able to extend the life of the mine by being able to access the ore that we need, because the concentration is decreasing.
Right. To sustain the level of copper, we need to mine more ore.
So if you were capped at 197 million tons, which is your current limit, what would that do to the mine capacity? Do you know?
Sorry, one more time.
Well, if you stayed at the current levels mm-hmm. that are allowed, you're allowed to move 197 million tons of earth. What would that do to the mine in the long term?
It doesn't allow us to operate as efficiently as we can. We're a business. We're in business to make money. And part of our sustainable development commitment is to provide prosperity to the communities, to the company, to the employees. And in order to do that, we want to operate in a way that's as efficient as we can possibly operate. Extending the life of the mine and allowing ourselves to move more material allows us to do that.
We're speaking with Kyle Bennett, a spokesman for Kennecott Utah Copper. Also with us, Cassidy Christensen, an environmental engineer for the company. And we're talking about the company and its hopes, dreams, and the impact on our air. 801-355-TALK is our number if you would like to join us, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. So the state's Air Quality Board approved your expansion plan last June. They said that certain improvements in the way you do business will actually decrease emissions by 9%. So maybe we can walk through some of the specific ways that you plan to do this. First, dust. Mining activity kicks up a lot of dust and particulate matter. You say you'll be able to reduce PM10 dust by 1,700 tons per year, and that PM2.5 fine particulate pollution by 472 tons a year. So how do you do that? What's your plan to contain and control the dust? Cassidy?
Sure. So specifically at the Bingham Canyon mine, this new permit requires extensive fugitive dust control measures. A new commitment into this permit is the requirement to apply commercial dust suppressants to the roads. That's a new commitment, as well as our enhanced watering program. Another big one is our commitment to purchasing bigger, more efficient haul trucks. With a bigger haul truck, you can haul more ore in the same amount of trips, so therefore reducing miles. So that's a big one for fugitive dust.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add to that on the dust control?
No, I think one thing that's really important to keep in mind, though, with this project is that us having the ability to extend the life of our mine and move forward with the Cornerstone project will provide some significant improvements in air quality for our operation in the valley. We will be able to convert three boilers at our on-site power plant to combined cycle natural gas. That will double the amount of power available while reducing air emissions by half at that plant. So overall, we're going to see a slight reduction in emissions by doing that and through the Cornerstone project.
Also, according to the State Department of Air Quality, hazardous air pollutants will increase slightly. 0.40 tons a year. So if you're decreasing dust and emissions from your trucks and equipment and your power plants, why are you still increasing a little bit of these hazardous air pollutants into the air? Cassidy Christensen?
I believe that's probably just a function of the switch in fuel at the power plant is probably where that increase comes from.
Mm. Again, we're speaking with Cassidy Christensen from Kennecott Utah Copper, also Kyle Bennett. And if you have questions or comments, 801-355-TALK is our number. Opponents of this plan are skeptical. They worry that maybe these numbers have been manufactured or touched up, or they just cannot wrap their heads around the fact that expanding your operation will actually reduce emissions and pollutants into the air. And it does seem to go contrary to the conventional wisdom. How do you explain it? How do you explain it, Cassidy?
Yeah, it's very complicated. It's a complicated issue. It's hard to explain. Overall, the Cornerstone project will result in a 5 to 10% decrease in emissions. That's over several projects through these permits. We're required to implement more aggressive fugitive dust control, for example, like we spoke about before. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is complicated, but the requirements of the permits actually will produce a 5 to 10% decrease from where we're currently operating right now.
But do you understand the skepticism here? Do you that, you know, how could you possibly do more and create less pollutant in our air? Kyle Bennett?
Sure. No, I fundamentally, I understand how people would be skeptical of that. But as a company, you know, we're becoming more sophisticated. A lot of the things that Cassidy mentioned, larger vehicles that are more efficient, dust control suppressants, and the repowering of our power plant is really a primary opportunity for us to make these improvements.
This plan has gotten the stamp of approval by the Utah Division of Air Quality. That happened last June. Certainly not a clear victory, though. The vote was 5-4 on the board, hardly a ringing endorsement. And in a letter last February, the EPA said it was skeptical of the state's analysis. So I'm interested in your response to the contention that, you know, maybe the science doesn't pencil out. Cassidy.
Right. There was a very thorough review done of the application, and I think it's probably worth stepping back. In the early 90s, when we had the 150.5 million ton limit in the state implementation plan approved by the EPA, there was also a mechanism included in that plan that allowed the state to modify those limits, given that they stepped through a certain process spelled out by the rules and regulations. And the state has done that twice since then, like you mentioned, in 1999 and then again in 2011. But it's very prescriptive in the regulations. What we're required to do, and then the state did a great job in their review of the application. So,
opponents say that the EPA actually has not approved the expansion in 1999, that the 1994 standards are the only ones that have gotten EPA approval.
The 1994 state implementation plan was approved by the EPA. The part that they're ignoring is that mechanism that gives the state the authority to modify those limits that was included and approved by EPA in that 1994 SIP. So the state has acted within its authority to modify the permit twice now.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect that the EPA will give its stamp of approval? You say there is a mechanism mm-hmm. in the 1994. Did they have to go back and review this latest application for expansion?
They do. They review it during the public comment period, and the EPA, yeah, does review these applications.
We're speaking with Cassidy Christensen, environmental engineer for Kennecott Utah Copper. Also with us, Kyle Bennett, spokesman for the company, and we're talking about the company's plans to expand and to control air quality, pollution going into our air. If you'd like to join us, if you have questions or comments for the company, now's your chance. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. No question, Utah has air quality problems, but what chunk is that due to Kennecott's activities? What role does Kennecott play in that equation? Some environmentalists are suing the company, saying it's violating the Clean Air Act and that an expansion of its duties will only exacerbate the problem. Today on the program, we're hearing Kennecott's side. Kennecott spokesman Kyle Bennett is with us, as well as environmental engineer Cassidy Christensen. If you have questions or comments for Kennecott about its operations or regional air quality issues in general, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. And let's go to the phones. We'll get our callers involved here. Melissa is joining us from Cottonwood Heights. Melissa, hi.
Hey.
Go right ahead.
Well, my question is, I was recently out at Kennecott and wasn't necessarily a tour of the mine, but was in the museum there, and the docent had mentioned before a program that we watched in the museum, that the trucks that pull the fill out of the mine travel collectively 10,000 miles a day, and they get about half a mile to the gallon in gasoline.
A half a mile a gallon.
And I was wondering, well, first I just want to corroborate that, and then find out if maybe Kennecott is exploring a more efficient way of getting the fill out of the mine.
Melissa, it's a good question. Thanks very much for the call. I think that the concerns about dust are certainly valid, but what about the equipment, the heavy equipment that you have to use? A half mile to the gallon. Is that true, first of all? Cassidy?
I don't know the exact number. It sounds like it's in the ballpark of true. In that space, tailpipe emissions are an emission source, obviously, at the Bingham Canyon mine. Through this new permit, we've committed to purchasing not only larger haul trucks that we talked about, but also more efficient haul trucks. The EPA has an engine program where progressively they are offering cleaner burning engines. So as those engines are available through our mine permit, we're required to buy the highest engine tier available. And with each engine tier are a set of base criteria emissions that piece of equipment must meet. So yes, absolutely. We've looked into that.
So better than a half mile a gallon.
Yeah.
Kyle, anything to add there?
No.
Okay. Melissa, does that answer your question?
Well, I just would wonder, is there an alternate way to get, I mean, other than using fossil fuel burning trucks, is there a way to get the fill out of the mine? It just seems like an antiquated way of getting the material out of the canyon.
Right. There probably are other ways. We're constantly researching. But yeah, right now this is the solution.
And when you're moving approximately 300 tons of material, there aren't, at least yet that I'm aware of, a hybrid type of vehicle. There are some technologies out there that are being looked at, though. It's getting some technologies that are at the point where we can actually implement them and feel confident in the fact that they're going to do the job. We've got alternative fuel vehicles, CNG vehicles. We've got a filling station at our operation. We have 12 vehicles. We're looking to expand that. Like many other companies, we've bought a number of hybrid vehicles. And we're also participating in some tests where vehicles are being powered, if you will, by sensors in the road. I mean, those are technologies that are being looked at, but we have to make decisions that we feel confident in the reliability, we feel confident that they can handle the payload, and we have to feel confident that it's a technology that we can really use. So that is an excellent question. And with our medium and our light-duty vehicles, we've made a number of tremendous changes and improvements. But we are utilizing the best available technology with our large haul trucks at the moment.
And it's an area that we're constantly researching.
Melissa, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Again, we're speaking with officials from Kennecott, Utah Copper, and their place in our air pollution. Barbara from Salt Lake called. She couldn't stay on the line, but says she thinks Kennecott's case sounds weak and wants to know if the dust depressants have any hazardous chemicals in them. So any sense of, when you're tamping down this dust, you're putting, is it just water, or are there other chemicals in what you're using to keep the dust down?
Right. So we do apply a lot of water at the mine. Like I said, as part of this new permit, we are required to apply commercial dust suppressant. These are suppressants that are available commercially, and would not be considered toxic if they're on the market commercially available.
Barbara, thanks for the call. Kyle, did you have something to add? Okay. 801-355-TALK is our number. My guest last month, Dr. Mensch from Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, said that Utah's air pollution is like breathing secondhand smoke, that red air days are actually like smoking. Has Kennecott done any research on the health effects of air pollution and its contributions to this problem in our area, Kyle?
I'm not familiar with any particular studies that we've put together, but what I can say with great confidence is that, you know, we're not out operating in a fashion that allows us to just do whatever we want. We're a highly regulated company. We continue to operate within the parameters of air permits, and we're consistently in compliance with those permits that we have with the Utah Department of Air Quality, the United States Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, those standards are based on strict human health standards. So that's very important to us and to our business, and we take that very seriously.
There's also a contention, let's see, this is from Marion Klaus of the Sierra Club of Utah, says that Salt Lake County exceeded EPA air quality standards 51 days in 2010, and that Kennecott contributes 30% of the overall pollution in Salt Lake County. Her contention is because of that, Kennecott should not be allowed to expand at all. Your thoughts on that, Cassidy?
Right. Well, Jennifer, we don't know where that 30% comes from. We've calculated that we contribute about 17% of PM10 and precursor emissions and about 6% of the PM2.5 fine particulate. And those numbers are based on the Division of Air Quality's statewide inventory. So that's publicly available data. It's important that you understand how you sum those pollutants up. I mean, you have PM10, and then you have its precursor emissions. So those emissions that aren't emitted as particulate, but once they react in the atmosphere, they form particulate. So it's a very important portion of the particulate. So if you sum those up correctly and appropriately, we're 17% of the inventory for PM10 and 6% of the inventory for PM2.5. So I don't know where the 30% comes from.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're speaking with Kennecott officials about Kennecott and its role in our air pollution. 801-355-TALK is our number. This email from John: the decrease in pollutants talked about, are they measured against only current output or an overall decrease including the expansion? In other words, will the output of pollution after the expansion be less or more than it currently is, not proportionately?
The 5 to 10% decrease that Kyle spoke about is an actual decrease from operations today. So through the fugitive dust control measures at the mine that Kyle talked about, or that I talked about, and then also the repower of the power plant, will result in a 5 to 10% decrease from today.
Hmm. John, thanks for that email. Opponents to your expansion say that no other mine in the world, you know, the Bingham Canyon mine is the largest in the world. No other mine in the world is this close to a city center, this concentration of a population. So the standards should be even higher here. Would you agree that the scale of the Bingham Canyon mine requires even more monitoring, more stringent requirements than EPA or the State Air Quality Board sets out? Kyle Bennett.
Well, what I can say is, again, I would reiterate the fact that we are in compliance consistently with permits that we hold with the Utah Department of Air Quality, the United States Environmental Protection Agency. I think that one thing that's important for people to understand is that we are, in many instances, going beyond just permit requirements. And, you know, that mine, the Bingham Canyon mine, has been out here for 109 years now. It's been providing economic prosperity. It's been providing jobs. It's been providing resources that we need as a society. And when that mine started, there certainly weren't as many homes near the mine. What you see is you're seeing development coming further west, but what that does is it creates an opportunity for us to be, I guess what I'm getting at is it gives us an opportunity to have very tight controls, stricter controls than even permits would allow. And maybe Cassidy could elaborate on some of those.
So, Jennifer, in the new permit, there are requirements in there above and beyond actually what's required. A new requirement out of that permit is to monitor particulates near the mine at two separate monitoring stations.
And previously it was just at one monitoring station.
We did
have
a monitoring station. We didn't report those results, but we now will. It'll be daily monitoring of particulate matter at those. We also, like I said before, the commitment to the commercial dust suppressant is now in there. There's several things in our permit that are above and beyond what actually is required.
And I guess one of the points that opponents say is that, you know, Rio Tinto, your parent company, made huge profits. It's making a lot of money, $14 billion in profits last year, and that more of that money should be devoted to fighting pollution, that you know, you have a duty and obligation because of your extreme prosperity. You are giving back in so many ways to the community, but you could do more in this area. Does Kennecott have any plans to invest even more in pollution fighting techniques? Kyle Bennett.
Yeah, and that's something I appreciate that question, and I appreciate having a chance to kind of address that, because we have heard that a great deal. You know, Rio Tinto's making $14 billion. Why can't we invest portions of that back into the operation? The fact is that we have a history of investing in our operation. In the mid-1990s, we invested about $880 million to modernize our refinery and our smelter. Our smelter is one of the cleanest and most modern in the world. We capture 99% of sulfur emissions from that smelter. That's technology that other countries have come over here, and we've helped them adopt that type of technology. We have spent approximately $20 million on combined heat and power systems. In December 2010, we started running our first system at a refinery, and that particular system is a 6.2 megawatt system, and it's going to reduce air emissions at that plant by about 90%. We're going to put another similar system in at our MAP facility that will be coming online in 2012. You know, we've made tremendous investments in solar technology. We have provided, and this is very broad what I'm talking about, a lot of the things we've done. We've provided a land donation to bring tracks out to the southwest part of the valley where there was not previously that type of service. So what that does is that creates an opportunity for people on one side of the valley to be connected on the other side of the valley. It eliminates single occupant vehicles being driven on our road, because tracks is an electric type of technology, the light rail system. We have 5 LEED certified buildings in our portfolio, and some of this is getting into energy improvements as well, but I'm not familiar with another company in the state at this time that has 5 LEED certified buildings in their portfolio. You know, I think that shows a great deal of leadership. We've also had a lot of behavioral change with our employees. One thing that we're really proud of is the fact that we have 2,400 employees that work for us directly, and a lot of those employees are showing a great deal of leadership. We don't have, obviously, we have a very strong leadership team, but we don't have 1, 2, or 3 people at the top that are making all the decisions. We have people who are participating in business improvement projects. We had a gentleman in Kennecott Operational Services, and he did a Six Sigma project that was about idle reduction. That has provided our company with tremendous benefits. And in fact, we've actually worked with other companies to help them implement similar types of projects and programs at their company. Our employees participate in Clear the Air Challenge. You know, in 2009, I believe was the first year it was run, we received, we were recognized with an award of achievement for that. We had the highest number of employees participate in that same program in 2011. And so
Well, what I hear you saying is, I mean, this is certainly on the company's radar, but I guess we can quibble with the percentage, but there's still a huge chunk of pollution that comes out of Kennecott, given, 17%, whatever, 30%, whatever the number is. There's still a lot of particulate matter that's coming into our environment. Will Kennecott continue to invest in emissions control, dust emissions control, and use some of those huge profits to help this community with air quality?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's part of our commitment to sustainable development. You know, another thing that I think is important that I would like your listeners to understand is that, I sense sometimes that people look at Kennecott employees, I mean, in a different way. We're part of this valley. We're concerned about air quality. I have two kids. I'm a dad of two kids, two young kids. My son's 3 and a half. I've got a newborn. He's 2 months old. I care more about their health and well-being than anything else. Cassidy's a mother. She's got a 5-year-old. We are at the table every day trying to create solutions, trying to be leaders. And we are going to continue to do that. Being a leader in this day and age is something that is part of our social license to operate. It's something that's expected. It's not, we don't operate in an environment anymore where it's something that we do it if we feel like it. It's something that's expected from our communities. It's expected from our stakeholders. And it's fundamentally a part of our work.
Our time is short, but I understand that several of the environmental groups that are suing Kennecott right now had been meeting with your company for months. The talks broke down. They eventually went to the courts. What happened from your vantage point? And I guess my overall question is, do you think this case may settle, that you will be able to find some common ground here? Kyle Bennett?
Well, I can say early on, as I recall the time frame, is as early as 2009, we met and had very transparent discussions with a number of groups. We've talked to them about our Cornerstone project, about our plan to repower our power plant. Like I said, we've met with them numerous times, but there came a point in time where, the discussions weren't as productive. A few folks stopped showing up. So, I certainly am not qualified to predict the future or what may happen, but what I can tell you is that we feel very confident in what we're doing, how we're operating our company. And again, we've got a lot of people that are very passionate about the operation. That's one of the things I'm really proud of, is coming to work every day and working with folks like Cassidy, who are extremely bright, extremely talented, and they care a great deal about making positive change, because air quality in this valley is going to be something that's a joint effort. There's no silver bullet for this. It's going to require private business to come in and make positive changes. It's going to require government organizations to come in and make positive changes. It's going to require your listeners and the folks at home to probably make behavioral changes, not to drive their car every single day to work. They may have to take light rail or some other alternative form of transportation, because we live in a very geographically constrained valley. So you add in, and I'm approximating 1.2 million people or so, industry, millions of cars, and it's a problem that we all need to step up to face the challenge.
Kyle Bennett, spokesman for Kennecott Utah Copper, Cassidy Christensen, environmental engineer for Kennecott, and thanks to you both for your time. Hopefully we can continue this discussion. It's an important one.
Thank you.
Up next, Micah Burhart on climbing and leadership, but first a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.